Okay, good to have everyone here. I'm going to give a brief intro on what we're concerned about, how we got here, and then everybody's going to weigh in. So for me, this is about, since the time I've been here, a total lack of process. I've been on the budget committee all 4 years, and at least when Mike Enzi was the chair, we actually had some meetings about budget mechanics. Doing what you would in any other organization or entity, you would not wait until after your fiscal year is over to explain to whoever your customers were or your constituents what you were going to do for the year that already passed. That's kind of what we're doing here. This is stuff we should be working on immediately out of the gate when we hit a new fiscal year. Of course, we missed that mark when we didn't have anything done over 2.5 months ago. So until we get some type of process that's put into place, I think for the American public, expect more of the same. And what I'd expect is that you're going to get bloated budgets that increasingly are filling in the lack of having political will to actually raise funds for whatever you're spending. We're borrowing, when I got here, it was about $1 trillion a year. A lot of it's driven by entitlements, stuff that we never have the political will to actually look at. It's now up close to $1.5 trillion. President Biden actually put a budget out there that doesn't apologize about it. It puts us into $1.5 trillion annual deficits with another $15 trillion in debt over the next 10 years. Anyone that thinks that's a good business plan for the biggest business in the world is just, you know, blind to the fact that that's not going to work. It's not going to be good for anyone. We're here to talk about some of the particulars and why we can't just accept it as business as usual. I've got my own theory. I believe that we get rolled by the other side of the aisle. They're unapologetic about their appetite for spending. This place is their growth business. And then we, as fiscal conservatives, complain about it, but then go along with it. And whenever this is just a quid pro quo game without doing any real work of rolling up your sleeves, it's going to be the same result. And the only people coming out on the short end are the people we say we're trying to serve. Borrowing money from your kids and grandkids without putting any forethought into what you're spending is a terrible business plan. My friends up here will share some of their ideas on what's wrong with the process as well.
So, Randy, you brought the bill. Why don't you go first?
I brought with me the Omni, 4,155 pages. When was it produced? In the dead of the night, 1:30 in the morning when it was released. Now, people argue that it's conservatives' fault. It's, you don't have the Christmas spirit. Somehow you're holding up government. Well, whose job is it to produce this? The people in charge of spending, the people in charge of both of the parties. When did they know that this would be necessary? Well, it's in the law, September 30th. You got 9 months, almost 10 months, to produce a plan, to have a spending plan. They weren't ready on September 30th, so they voted themselves 90 more days. They weren't ready last week either, so they voted themselves another week. And now we have it at 1:30 in the morning this morning. But what's the clamor? The clamor is to vote. Vote now. Let's get it done. Why are you standing in the way of spending? Well, the real question is this. What is more dangerous? What is more dangerous to the country? $1.1 trillion in new debt, or as Republican leadership likes to say, oh, but it's a win. It's a big win. We're getting $45 billion for the military. So which is more important? Which threatens the country more? Are we at risk for being invaded by a foreign power if we don't put $45 billion into the military? Or are we more at risk by adding to a $31 trillion debt? I think the greatest risk to our national security is our debt. The process stinks. It's an abomination. It's a no-good, rotten way to run your government. $6 trillion entity, and they want 24 hours to process this, and then they want to go forward. I will be demanding two amendments. One, that this goes against the budget rules. The PAYGO rules say you can't do this. You can't have all this new spending unless it's offset. We will also be demanding that the PAYGO rules are increased. Instead of taking 60 votes to evade the rules, we're going to ask that it be a two-thirds vote to evade the rules. The American people don't want this. They're sick and tired of it. They're paying for it through the nose with inflation. Adding $1 trillion to the deficit will simply fuel the fires that are consuming our wages and consuming our retirement plans. It's a terrible system. Someone needs to stand up. We're standing up, and we're going to say no.
Thank you, Rand. Thanks for bringing the prop. I think what I have found most disconcerting about this discussion, this debate, this process, is the whistling past the graveyard nature of it. We're talking about this is a big win in terms of conservatism and for Republicans that we're getting a greater increase in defense spending. One of the things I've been pointing out, because of the massive inflation, because a dollar that we all held at the start of the Biden administration is worth less than 88 cents, the $858 billion we're getting on defense is literally worth only $754 billion in January of 2021 dollars. That's how much inflation has eroded the value of all spending, including defense spending. But the fact that nobody talks about the numbers, I mean, in total, the macro numbers, I thought it was interesting last week as I was asking my colleagues and quite honestly, a number of you reporters, just the simple question, do you know how much we spent last year? And the blank stares I got from most people. Now, I'm still asking that question. I think people are getting a little educated, so that now they're starting to answer it. But the answer is $6.3 trillion last year. To compare that to before the pandemic in 2019, we spent $4.4 trillion. This, the discretionary side, less than 70% of what we spend is going to be $1.65 trillion, which is 23% more than the $1.3 trillion we spent in 2019. I mean, again, that is a massive increase, and my concern is overall federal spending will probably be about $6 trillion for the fiscal year. Again, $6 trillion versus a baseline just 3 years ago of $4.4 trillion. Something's got to give. At some point, we do hit a debt crisis, and I would argue, 7% plus inflation, with really no ending in sight, is certainly an inkling of what that debt crisis is going to look like and how that is going to devastate Americans. In all areas of the income spectrum, but particularly people at the lower end who spend their money, their disposal income, on things that have actually risen at a higher rate than 7%. The amendment that I'll be asking for and that Senator Schumer agreed to last week would be to eliminate all the earmarks, and I've got my own prop here. So that's the entire omnibus. This is the language on earmarks only. There are, let me get the exact numbers, $9.8 billion worth of earmarks. Thousands of individual projects here. Both Democrat and Republican. It's interesting to note on the Republican side, we actually have a conference resolution that we don't support earmarks. Well, we're supporting over $4 billion worth. Democrats are getting $5.4 billion worth of earmarks. This is the gateway drug to the massive deficit spending, to the mortgaging of our children's future. It has to stop, which is why I'm going to offer an amendment to eliminate all those earmarks in this massive omnibus spending bill. Senator Lee.
This monstrous spending bill clocks in at 4,155 pages. It was released in the middle of the night. We've had it for only a few hours. And now we're being told Congress needs to vote on and pass this thing on an expedited basis. Some are saying, within the next 48 to 72 hours. By doing that, they're acknowledging the fact that they're treating what is fundamentally a legislative proposal. I mean, let's be serious about this. This is a handful, like four or five people in Congress wrote this. And they put it together. They introduced it in the middle of the night, in the early morning hours of today. And now they're wanting to collapse all hearings, all floor debates, all discussions in earnest about this and say you just have to pass it because this is what the process is. Well, the process is this way because time after time, you've got enough members who agree to support these things without even having voted for it. Some of our colleagues must have magical powers, powers that I can't grasp or even understand. Because one of the reasons why this works is that you've had, I think, all 50 Democrats agreeing in advance they'd support it, and you've had between 10 and 20 Republicans agreeing in advance that they would support it, even though essentially none of them have seen this. I've got friends on the Appropriations Committee, including some who are subcommittee chairs or subcommittee ranking members on there who hadn't seen it. And yet they didn't know what was in it. So magically, those 50 Democrats and those 10 to 20 Republicans who pledged their support for it before it even existed, they somehow knew what was in it. Well, it wasn't just that they were clairvoyant. It's that they were sort of bought off piece by piece, person by person. And I don't mean bought off in the legally corrupt sense, but in the sense that it's a corrupt process. You hand out enough special favors here or there to get this or that proposal, this or that funding priority in there. You throw out 7,500 earmarks, and you're going to get a lot of people to jump on board. That isn't right. It used to be that the legislative process involved reading and debating and discussing and amending. It used to be that once a bill like this reached the floor, after it had gone through a full committee markup process, that you would still have an abundant chance on the floor to debate it and discuss it, because most people on the committee in question are not represented. Most people not on that committee have never had an opportunity by the time it reaches the floor to weigh in. So we had that. But today, it seems that we have to beg and plead and barter for any amendments, and we're made to feel guilty about it in the process. They have the audacity to hold off on this thing deliberately, by design, and release it in the early morning hours of December 20th, having scheduled a shutdown the day before Christmas Eve, and then tell us that it's somehow on us unless we eagerly jump onto it and read it. Why is that a problem? Well, it's a problem because, again, it's 4,155 pages long. We get desensitized to this over time. The complexity. Complexity in law is itself a subsidy. It's a corrupt subsidy that subsidizes the wealthy and the well-connected in this country. 4,155 pages long. Just put this in perspective for a minute. I speak, on average, about 120 words per minute when I speak on the Senate floor. I don't know whether that's something to be proud of or not. I don't know how that stacks up to others, but that's the rate at which I typically speak on the Senate floor. At that pace, it would take me 5 straight days. And by days, I don't mean 8-hour work days or 10 or 12-hour work days. I mean 24-hour work days. 5 straight 24-hour periods consecutively, back to back, without so much as a bathroom break. And certainly no opportunity for sleeping. Nothing other than reading. It would take 5 straight consecutive days of continuous reading at that pace in order to get through this. The Bible is a long book, and it's 1,200 pages long. And so going through this, reading through this, which the Bible's actually interesting and full of stories that you can follow, much more interesting than this. I mean, even when you get into the depths of Habakkuk, you're not dealing with stuff like this. But you'd have to read to get to the same amount of text, you'd have to read the Bible 3.5 times during that same period and be able to comprehend it. And unlike the Bible, this stuff can't be really read on its face and understood. It takes cross-referencing to understand all of that. I've got a number of friends who have detailed a number of the more absurd examples of the carve-outs that they've used to barter and thereby procure the advance votes of a number of my colleagues, some of which are absurd. A few of them were identified by my friend Scott Parkinson. Curiously, there were a few members whose names appeared quite repeatedly and prominently in these. For example, you'll be very pleased to know that in this, we've got the federal building on 7th Street in San Francisco that's named for Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. Then you've got the our Senate Appropriations Committee Chair, Patrick Leahy. What was the Lake Champlain Basin Program is now going to be the Patrick Leahy Lake Champlain Basin Program. And we're also stuffing an additional $35 million a year, each year, every year between now and 2027. I'm sure that's just a coincidence that he's the Appropriations Chair, and that's also on there. Oh, also, our colleague, Richard Shelby, from Alabama. I guess there are still a few things in Alabama that have yet to be named after Richard Shelby. He's got someone there as well, including an FBI arsenal building down there. If you like presidential museums, you'll love this one, because we've got $6 million for the Ulysses S. Grant Museum. It needs an overhaul to the tune of $6 million. One of my favorites might be the $1.7 billion that goes to transportation structures and infrastructure developed specifically to combat climate change. That's in there, too. Some Republicans are trying to call it a big win. I'm sorry, I have a hard time calling that a big win. When you unite all 50 Democrats and sharply divide Republicans, getting, I don't know, probably 10 to 20 votes to support this, I don't understand how that's a big win for Republicans, especially right after we've just had an election. And control of the House has now shifted from Democrats to Republicans. I don't understand that math. I don't understand that logic, but it's not right. You know, there's something more to this. This isn't just about the balance of this fiscal year. It's that, and we're giving them way too much on that. But it's that this then becomes the norm. This resets the defaults, such that if, heaven forbid, we get to the end of this fiscal year and there is an agreement on a series of spending bills or one big one or whatever, we may for a period of time, perhaps a long period of time, end up operating on the basis of a continuing resolution. Guess which levels this then extends? These higher levels. Ladies and gentlemen, this is why we're $31 trillion in debt, because of stuff like this. It's making the American people poorer. It's destabilizing our economy. It's making it so that the average Utah family now finds life unaffordable, having to shell out an additional $1,000 a month every single month for their basic monthly necessities. This is wrong. It's got to stop, but it will not stop until members of Congress, including U.S. senators elected as Republicans, committed to some semblance of fiscal conservatism, refuse to vote for bills that they have not read, that they do not understand, that are cobbled together and that impoverish the American people. They do a lot of good, but most of that good is for special interests and for the popularity of the politicians who vote for these things, who will get a big bump for the moment when they get praised by the public and by the media and by the special interests for passing this thing. It needs to stop.
Before I ran for governor of Florida back in 2010, I'd been in business all my life. And I didn't start out with money, so I had to go to banks and I had to go to investors to start the companies I started. So if I went to a bank and I said to them, give me a bunch of money, and here's the documents you have to sign, and you'll have 24 hours to read them, what do you think the chances I would have gotten any money? I wouldn't have gotten any money. If I went to an investor and said, this is what you have to sign, you've got 24, 48 hours to read it, but you have to sign it, and I want your money. You think they'd given it to me? No, they wouldn't have given it to me. So if you went out and hired somebody to help you buy something, and a lawyer, or you had a financial planner helping you review an investment, and they said, look, I don't have time to read it, but you should just sign it, and maybe afterwards we'll know what's in it, you would fire the lawyer or you would fire the financial planner. Nobody leads their personal life the way our federal government is operating. We get a bill that should have happened before September, that we all should have had plenty of time to review. We get a bill at 1:28 in the morning that's three times the size of the Bible. The Bible might have a lot of interesting stories, but I've tried to read the entire Bible straight through a bunch of times. It's hard. Think about it. We'd have to read it over three times between now and Friday night. If you wanted to say, I'm going to read every page, you'd have to read from 8 o'clock this morning, 24 hours a day, through Friday night. You'd have to read 47 pages an hour. I'd fall asleep. I think most people would fall asleep being able to do that, and you wouldn't be able to comprehend it. So 4,155 pages, 7,500 earmarks, right? And how many people, when you go back home and you say, I supported 7,500 earmarks for things that they would not spend their money on, that people would say, oh, you should reelect those people. We can't keep doing this. And I've been up here 4 years. We're going to keep doing this. I don't know why is something going to change? The Democrats have been able to do this in the past. They're going to do it next year. We'll be in the exact same position next year because we have allowed them to get away with it. This has got to stop. We've got to say, we came up here to be fiscally responsible and watch your money. If you look at the inflation that's happening right now, inflation is caused by one thing, reckless government spending. $31 trillion of the debt. If anybody's buying a new house and you look at the mortgage has gone up to over 6%, okay, that's caused because we have $31.5 trillion worth of debt and we keep running deficits. If you look at the inflation, which has been about 14% since Biden got elected, it's because we haven't lived within our means. So if we care about Americans, we got to start acting responsibly. Given us a bill at 1:28 in the morning, that's over 4,000 pages that nobody will have the opportunity to read, that we'll have no idea what's in it, is not the way to run your personal life, your business life, or your government. This has to stop.
Any questions?
Hey, Senators, thanks for taking questions, by the way. There's a couple non-germane things in there, one of which is on page 1947, which is the Electoral Count Act. The other one's on page 2002, and that's the ban on TikTok on federal phones. That's actually a Republican idea. First, does anybody have any opinions on the TikTok provision in this spending bill?
I support not having TikTok on government phones, and I think every parent ought to start looking at whether they should, their children should be able to use TikTok. TikTok is absolutely controlled by the Communist Party of China. It's destabilizing. It's not good for our children. I think we ought to have to look at how we do any business with Communist China, and I think this is one example.
Rather than comment specifically on what's included in here, let's talk about why it was included. This is supposedly a must-pass piece of legislation, and so you will see those types of bills included in these types of piece of legislation without debate, not having gone through the committee, but just get stuck together. Again, it's a horrible way of legislating. It's a horrible way of running this country. And that's what we're saying here. This has to stop. We can't continue this way. Whether you're for a particular piece of legislation or not, this isn't the way it should be passed.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Senators. Leader McCarthy is threatened to block legislation next year from any Senate Republican who supports the omnibus. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I think what we ought to do is we ought to be supporting the Republican in the House. Republicans of the House have said they do not want this bill. They want to have the opportunity to pass a spending bill when they're in control. Would you rather have, if you think about it, when you're buying a company, you're doing any document, you want to be the one that writes the document. The same with this. We should have Republicans write this bill rather than Democrats write this bill. This is a Pelosi Schumer bill, not a McCarthy Republican leadership bill in the Senate. So I support letting the Republican House do this. And by the way, in the bill, they have disaster funding for Florida. We had a hurricane. I've been asking for support and actually, first off, asking for the number we need out of FEMA. Haven't gotten it. I've asked for a bill on disaster relief. Haven't gotten it because they want to put it in a bill that shouldn't be in. So I'm going to demand a separate vote for disaster relief.
And once we get through this, they ought to set the example next year on how you do it. They need to get to work on all of these appropriation bills in a timely manner and set the example for how it's going to be done. If not, there'll be some of us here holding them accountable. And McCarthy has said he will do that. I hope he does.
Hey, go ahead. To that point, following up on that, this appears to be a splintering in the Republican Party for both sides. Is it problematic to you guys, and especially your effectiveness, if you have a House Republican leader who isn't on the same page as the Senate Republican leader?
Well, I think each of us represent our states. All right, and I was very clear when I ran, and I was very clear when I was governor. I mean, I balance a budget. I mean, people up here say, oh, you'll never support a spending bill. Well, if you sign a budget every year, I signed a budget spending bill every year. as governor. We negotiated with the legislature, and I did it, and I also did vetoes. So what we need to do up here is have something where we go through a process. But right now, I think we ought to be supporting the Republicans in the House. We shouldn't be passing something at the end of the year. It's just going to be it's just for helping Pelosi and Schumer. That's all we're doing.
Have you talked directly to McCarthy about this at all?
I have any of you guys? Many times. And I've talked to him an hour ago. Talked to him last night. I've talked to him a lot, and he's
Thank you.
Yeah. Look, I don't ever want to speak for someone who's not present, especially when they can speak for themselves. But to answer your question, yes, I've spoken to him many times, and he and I have similar concerns that we've expressed publicly. And I think he's got a legitimate one. I mean, one of the reasons for this, I've shared this with you before, or at least with most of you, but since 1954, control of the House has shifted only 5 times. Each time during a midterm election, and at no point in 0 of those 5 switches did you have the lame duck Congress during a lame duck session passing a comprehensive spending bill during the lame duck period. Shouldn't happen now. And anyway, to answer your original question, yeah, I do think this is harmful to Republicans. We've got a Republican leader in the House and a Republican leader in the Senate, and they are taking diametrically opposed positions here. And I'm with McCarthy on this one. Yeah, under no circumstances are we going to go over the shutdown deadline. And by the way, I trust and would hope that when you ask my colleagues who are proponents of this bill, that you would ask them the same question. Keep in mind, they are the ones who held control of this. They are the ones who, feigning the inability to get it done any sooner, dropped this on us just days before Christmas, having artificially contrived a shutdown threat that would come to full maturity at midnight the day before Christmas Eve. So I hope you'll ask them that same question. But no, as I look at the timing of this with the Senate rules, even if there were no time agreement at all, this one's not going to create a shutdown. Whether there's a shutdown as a result of House action, I don't know. But assuming that the Senate ends up passing this, there's no conceivable universe in which it eats into that or requires another extension on our end. But this is part of the problem, though. They contrive the shutdown threat by setting up a shutdown right before Christmas. And they do this year after year. Shame on them, but shame on us for falling for it over and over again.
I'd like to just answer that question as well. Unfortunately, this is misreported all of the time. Every day in the hallway, they say, are you going to hold up the spending bill? Are you going to be the fly in the ointment that allows government to shut down? Instead of the honest answer, when did they learn that there was a deadline for spending, and why didn't they meet the deadline? The deadline for spending is September 30th. Every year, they didn't meet it. They were given 90 additional days. And last week, that deadline came, and they didn't meet it. They were given an additional week, and with that week mostly gone, they come forward and say, and then all of a sudden, it's conservatives' fault for blocking this? No. They know the rules. The rules of the Senate haven't changed. It takes a week to pass a bill in the Senate. And people say, are you going to hold it up? No, it's like, am I going to grant a speeding up of the bill, an expediting of the bill? This is about us doing a special favor to the people who are bankrupting the country. They're in charge. They know the deadlines. It is all on them. These people I would not put in charge of a Minute Mart and 3 gas stations, much less a $6 trillion economy. They know the deadlines. They fail every year. They bring it to Christmas, and then they blame conservatives. And the thing is, people say, well, you won't vote for a spending bill. Sure, I will. I'll vote for 99% of what we spent last year. You do that for 5 years, and you'll just about balance your budget.
You say that they're in charge of the timing on this, but to a degree, you have a little bit of dictate over the timing of this. So are you going to do what you can do, which is use the time that's allotted for this?
Right. We have zero power over the timing of when the bills are presented. We weren't participating in writing the bill. It was done by about 3 or 4 people in leadership and appropriations. So we really don't control the timing. The timing is also set by the Senate rules. Bills take about a week. Those are the rules. You can have exceptions to the rules if everybody gets together. So if you want to declare that America's great and we should celebrate the 4th of July, I'm all for expediting that. But for expediting $1 trillion in deficit, I ran for office because I think we're destroying our country. We're going to destroy our currency. Why would I jump up and down and say, oh, well, let me please get out of the way so you can further bankrupt the country? But it really is absolutely 100% their responsibility. They control the legislative calendar. Senator Schumer controls the day-to-day. No one else can bring a bill forward. The majority leader has all that power. But I'm pretty ecumenical on the blame. When Republicans were in charge of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, they continued to add trillions of dollars to debt, even when we controlled the calendar. But when that happened, I wasn't in charge of the calendar, and the same thing happened. They missed the deadlines, bumped it up against a holiday, and then blamed conservatives. I'm sick of taking it. We haven't decided.
Look, the bill's 4,155 pages long. We got it a few hours ago.
Read the bill.
So I find it offensive when colleagues suggest they deliberately contrive this shutdown threat. They are extorting us and the American people, using the American people and the legitimate fears they have as bait. And then they drop it on us at the last possible moment when they can plausibly do it. And then within hours, are you done yet? Are you finished? Are you ready to give us consent? That is the height of presumptuousness. This is legislative barbarism. This is extortion, and it's wrong. So it's, I'm sorry, that is way too soon to be asking us how quickly we're going to jump to expedite their process from which they excluded every single one of us and 330 million Americans. That's wrong. That's a darn good question, because last time I checked, every Republican runs year after year on a platform that includes fiscal conservatism. That's sort of the one uniter. We represent lots of different states with lots of different idiosyncrasies, but the one thing that I think unites us all is we've all run as fiscal conservatives. I wish there were more of us at this press conference. I know there are more of us who feel this way, who for whatever reason just couldn't make it today. But I'd love to have more. Because, look, the fact is this. Every one of us can find something in here that we like. Every one of us can identify some worthy, deserving beneficiaries who will benefit from this legislation. That is not the question. The question is, viewed as a totality, is this right? Not only do I think it's not right, but I also know that they can't know that it's right after seeing it for like 6 minutes.
So the important thing is look at the final vote when we get to it. There'll be 30 or 35, I think, that are going to vote against this. And if it's not for folks like us speaking up, you may not get that many. And this is just a start. The biggest thing you need to take away from this is we've now got a group of six or seven. It used to be two or three of us. And that's because more and more the American public's coming our way. Even more within our own conference, they're just not going to get up here. But we're going to do this not only here when you are up against the gun, we're going to do this every week out of the year going forward to point this out. And we've never really done that before. We're not going to just take these moments when you have to get up and you get this laid in your lap. We know what that's going to end up doing. It's going to go through. But going through this next year, we've had people speak up in our own conference. I'm not going to say who, that are talking about real reform to the process. A few of them that'll even probably vote for it, but that know that it's a broken system.
Is there like a name for this group? Like, are you guys coming, if you're doing this every week then?
Well, on my card, we call it, our office does, the Breakfast Club, because we get together at about 9 o'clock now on every Tuesday. With no breakfast. We're fiscal conservatives.
I call it a group with no name.
Thank you guys so much.
A group that isn't a group.